Good afternoon, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the blind and print handicapped. This is Ken in my regular Friday reader seat, reading from the Friday, August 12th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And our front page is covered with a large picture of the Cubs and the Cincinnati Reds walking out of the corn last night and headed up with the headline, Heaven in Iowa. And if you happened to listen to the game last night, you heard that the early offense of the Cubs carried them past the Reds. And it was a wonderful game to listen to or to be at if you had such fortunate luck to be there. And it was a great night, and our paper is just filled with pieces all about the experience. We'll begin with some of that on our Tri-State page 2. Players, managers, voice support for MLB in Dyersville. And we have a large insert picture of the Chicago Cubs manager David Ross answering questions during a press conference before the game against the Cincinnati Reds at the Field of Dreams on Friday, or on Thursday rather, today's Friday. Our article reads, "The game of baseball has sent David Ross around the world, but the Chicago Cubs manager admitted that Thursday's trip to Dubuque County was special, even for a big league globetrotter. Over my time in this sport, I've been to Mexico with the Dodgers during spring training, watched the events Major League Baseball has put on in Cuba or Puerto Rico or London," Ross said. "Being able to have those events all over our country and all over the world, I think is so special. The times teams have gotten to go to Japan, they are so unique and special and continue to grow our game," Ross said. "This one, just being able to be a part of this, is a little more movie-esque because of all of us growing up and seeing the movie Field of Dreams." A day after Frank Thomas, the Baseball Hall of Famer and CEO of Go the Distance Baseball, which owns the Field of Dreams, said that construction projects would likely keep Big League Baseball from making a local appearance in 2023, members of the Chicago Cubs and Cincinnati Reds expressed their desires for Dyersville joining a potential future rotation of MLB venues. "I think it should be," said Kyle Farmer, Reds third baseman. "Just walking out here, guys in the locker room are still talking about how cool it is here. I think every baseball player should experience this. Seeing the ball go out in the cornfield during batting practice, it looks like it never ends. It's incredible what they've done here." Nick Madrigal sensed the magic of Dubuque County in the Field of Dreams as soon as the Cubs' plane touched down at Dubuque Regional Airport. "I quickly noticed the cornfields and how they just go on forever. I thought it was a special place," said Madrigal, a second baseman with the Cubs. The Cubs were the first team to arrive at the Major League ballpark adjacent to the Field of Dreams movie site for the game against the Reds. Cubs players visited the movie site upon their arrival, some walking around the movie site's infield. "It made me feel like I was in the movie," said Wilson Contreras, Cubs catcher. "We should be able to come more often to Iowa to play baseball. I think they could still improve some areas, but I think they've done a really good job, and I'm looking forward to enjoying the game tonight." Ross described the experience of a Dubuque County welcome as team buses traveled from Dubuque Regional Airport to the ballpark. "It was cool to be driving in and see people on the street corners with their lawn chairs outside their houses just waiting for the buses to go by and wave," he said. "You can tell it's a really big event when people are that anxious about a drive-by. Going through the town, it was almost like a little parade just getting here." Ross's rival manager in the opposite dugout echoed those sentiments. My favorite part of driving in from the airport were the people on the side of the road waving. There were a lot of people out. It was just another reminder how much this game means to people, said Reds manager David Bell. Bell described the setting as beautiful. I was expecting that, but I don't think you can really imagine what it's going to be like until you get here. The whole setting, it's just a baseball field in the middle of nowhere. To me, that's beautiful. Ross described the atmosphere at the Dyersville Big League venue with the adjacent movie site as second to none. You hit the movie site field and, I don't know, I just got the urge to run. So I ran to the team photo, he said. It's just one of those moments that you step foot out there and you feel like a kid. You feel anxious and excited to get this thing going. It's a really cool venue. First baseman Joey Votto of the Reds said the trip to Dyersville was a shock to the in-season routine for him. Cincinnati had played the Mets in New York the day before flying to Iowa. But I'm willing to make the adjustment, Votto said. This place is special. We follow that piece with fans thrilled by chance to see MLB at Field of Dreams. And that also has a large picture from the perspective of the fans sitting in the stands watching. We have a lady in the forefront standing and applauding. And our caption for that picture reads, fans cheer from the stands during the Major League Baseball game between the Chicago Cubs and the Cincinnati Reds at the Field of Dreams in Dyersville on Thursday. And our piece reads, for many, Thursday night at the Field of Dreams represented a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I grew up in this area, in Maquoketa, Iowa, and I remember the movie being filmed here, said Casey Maxted, now of Iowa City. This is my first trip back since I was a kid. This is a bucket list type of item. Thousands descended on Dyersville on Thursday for the second ever Major League Baseball game at the iconic Field of Dreams site. The Chicago Cubs and Cincinnati Reds played at a temporary 8,000-seat stadium adjacent to the original movie site. It's weird, said Walt Kelsey of Cincinnati. You're driving out here and you feel like you're in the middle of nowhere. You think, are they actually going to play a nationally broadcast game here? But it's beautiful. Kelsey said he drove up to Dyersville the night before with his family. This is a dream trip, Kelsey said. We're blessed to be here. I was 8 years old when the movie was filmed, and those sports movies that stood out the test of time, Field of Dreams, Hoosiers, those were the soundtrack to my childhood. Kelsey said he was there to cheer for the Reds with his 12-year-old son, Walter. Kelsey noted he surprised his son with the tickets Wednesday night. He had never seen the movie before until this week, and now he's seen it two or three times, Kelsey said of his son. Matt Morgan of Indianapolis said he liked hearing the whispers of phrases from the movie, such as, if you build it, they will come, when walking through the corn to the stadium. It's unbelievable, he said, gesturing to the stadium. It's much more than I expected. Prior to the game, the sounds of dozens of balls hitting gloves could be heard as families had a catch, emulating the 1989 Field of Dreams film. Brian Valdez of Chicago took photos peeking out of the corn at the movie site. He said he loved watching the Field of Dreams movie as a kid, and seeing the site in person made his memories of the movie screen a reality. The tickets were a bit pricey, but this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, he said. Who knows when my Cubbies will be back? I have watched the Cubs win the World Series, and now I get to see them playing at the Field of Dreams. It's awesome. Derek Duncan of Lake City, Iowa, donned both a Cubs shirt and a Cowboys hat to the game. WGN was one of five channels we got on TV growing up, so we always watched the Cubs play, he said. This is the closest we're going to get to seeing them play. Jack Muthing, 15, of Cincinnati, said he was most hoping for a Reds win or on Thursday night. I was so excited, just so excited, when I found out about getting Field of Dreams tickets, he said. It's been great. They really did it all right with how they had the movie site set up with the corn hole and stuff. Eric Strudmeyer of Barrington, Illinois, and his 14-year-old son, Elliot, were in Dyersville for the first time to root for the Cubs. I'm excited to be here, Elliot said. Definitely, seeing the movie site is so cool. Janelle Reddick and Robin Butler of Iowa City donned Cubs jerseys for the game. It's just been an Iowa icon destination for a long time, Reddick said of the movie site. Every time family comes to visit, they want to come here. The two said they enjoyed following along with all of the Cubs players' tweets on Thursday to see their reactions to the Field of Dreams. I feel like this takes all the business out of baseball and brings the game back to pure joy, Butler said of the event. As we go to page 3, we continue with Tri-State news about the game. Field of Dreams pitches perfect game for Dyersville businesses. The spotlight of the Major League Baseball game at the Field of Dreams in Dyersville shone on surrounding businesses well before the game's first pitch Thursday. The game and events surrounding it drew crowds happy to spend money at local businesses. Megan Kennedy is a bartender at Textile Brewing Company who worked the brewery's beer tent Wednesday and at the brick-and-mortar location on 2nd Street Northeast on Thursday. She said Textile was busier from open to close than she ever had seen on a weekday. As a bartender, I made more tip money than any other day of my life just at the little stand we had on the square, she said. We would never see crowds like this on a Wednesday or Thursday. Seven Hills West, a new Dyersville location of Dubuque-based Seven Hills Brewing Company, aligned its soft opening with the Field of Dreams game week, serving food and beer Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evening. The bar stayed full the entire time we've been open, and that's the people of Dyersville, which I love, marketing manager Olivia Sullivan said. They're still here, remember, and we're excited to have a new place to go. Seven Hills West will open fully on September 3rd. Both breweries crafted specialty beers for the event. Textile offered up a beverage called If You Brew It, an Iowa corn-based lager, and Seven Hills sold If You Fruit It, They Will Come, a blueberry and granola fruited wheat ale. Proprietors at Savvy Salvage, an antique, upcycle, and fine art shop in Dyersville, kept track of fans visiting with fan boards on which visitors signed their names on ball-field-shaped boards, one for the Cubs, one for the Reds. I would say about 80% of our customers were from Cincinnati, which you wouldn't have thought with Chicago being so close, owner Heidi Heisman said. She said she hopes organizers of Beyond the Game events surrounding the Field of Dreams game plan similar offerings next year, even though Frank Thomas, CEO of Go the Distance Baseball, which owns the Field of Dreams, said Wednesday that there likely won't be an MLB game at the Field of Dreams next year due to construction at the site. I don't think that just because there is no game next year, they can't have all of this, Huseman said. Carrie Parrott, owner of Bird's Nest, a vendor within Savvy Salvage, said the visitors were amazing. They are just so excited. It's infectious. It really is, she said. And they love the town and say that, which is so nice to hear. Jenny Yeager is a customer service representative at clothing retailer Haberdash Outfitters Company at 201 First Avenue East. She said the business has been busy for more than a week ahead of the game. It's a much better crowd than last year, I would say, she said. I think people just took some time to really know what was all happening, what all people were offering. Haberdash created graphic T-shirts in honor of the Field of Dreams game. Yeager said they were well worth the work, given their popularity. It's tricky because of what you can and can't use due to copyright and everything, she said. But they really came out well. People seem to really like them. Outside of Midwest One Bank in Dyersville, two young entrepreneurs also got in on the success local businesses were seeing. Rachel Rundy, 12, set up a lemonade stand with a friend too bashful to provide her name, complete with a red wagon and coffee can for a cash drawer. We're making a decent amount of money, Rachel said Thursday afternoon. We decided we wanted to raise money for things, for stores in town, so we can help them out. And a second piece from our Tri-State page. Baseball fans gather at park to watch big game on big screen. John and Susan Wolf drove 8 hours from their home in Cincinnati to watch a baseball game on TV, and it was more than worth it. The couple arrived at Westside Park in Dyersville 6 hours before the start of Thursday's Major League Baseball game at the Field of Dreams to set up their lawn chairs right in front of the screens in City Square. The Chicago Cubs are John's favorite team, while Susan roots for the Cincinnati Reds. Both of them believed their respective team would win Thursday. By 6 p.m., the two were surrounded by hundreds of lawn chairs and just as many baseball fans eager to watch the game being played just a few miles away. "It's so cool to come here and see it look like the movie," Susan said. "We wanted to see the game in this way." For the many baseball fans in Dyersville on Thursday who weren't lucky enough to nab tickets for the game between the Reds and the Cubs, the viewing party held at City Square served as the next best thing. And the crowd that formed to watch the game on the screens set up there still were plenty enthusiastic. Dyersville resident Roger Gibbs, 67, attended the watch party held last year when the New York Yankees played the Chicago White Sox at Field of Dreams. He remembered thinking that game would largely be a blowout, but it ended up being so exciting that many watching the game at City Square found themselves on their feet by the end. The White Sox ended up defeating the Yankees 9-8. Just the atmosphere of seeing the town come together is really something special, Gibbs said. We're not there, but it's still very exciting. Dyersville residents Jana and Chris Lansing missed the watch party for last year's Field of Dreams game, so they wanted to make sure they came out to support the community this year. Chris is a relative of Don Lansing, who previously owned the farm on which the Field of Dreams movie was filmed. He said he is conflicted about seeing the development that has been going on at the movie site since MLB announced its first game at the field. "Every new development strips the property of its identity as a farm," he said. But he also wants to see Dyersville grow because of the Field of Dreams' success. "I have mixed feelings about the whole thing," Chris said. "I do love to see it grow more in Dyersville." As the sun set behind them and the game came on the screens, many fans took their seats and watched attentively. At the start of the national anthem, attendees stood from their seats and took off their caps. When military planes flew over the stadium, people at the watch party pointed and shouted at the same planes, visible just over the tree line. The real game was being played a few miles away. But as far as the fans at Westside Park were concerned, it was right in front of them. "This is what baseball is about," John Wolf said. "Holding this whole thing was a great idea." Continuing along our same theme of the game, we have some more from the Tri-State page. Big League Dreams Come True for Young Athletes. And we have a large picture of an older man doing a fist bump with a young man on the base. And it's Tom Witchery giving a fist bump to Kyle Stumpf during the Field of Miracles game at Miracle League of Dubuque at Veterans Memorial Park in Dubuque on Thursday. The Miracle League teamed up with Fox Sports for the event. And our article reads, hours before the Chicago Cubs and Cincinnati Reds faced off at a stadium adjacent to the Field of Dreams movie site in Dyersville, young players wearing the team's uniforms took to a specially designed field in Dubuque for a game of their own. Miracle League of Dubuque partnered with Fox Sports to host a Field of Miracles game for athletes with disabilities on Thursday morning at the Miracle League complex in Veterans Memorial Park. In honor and celebration of the Field of Dreams game, we're making the big league dreams come true for these athletes, said Mark Toyama, Fox Sports' Director of Community Partnerships. Sports have such an impact, mentally, physically, emotionally, and socially, for the development of the people involved, so it's really important that everybody gets the chance to play. The network donated custom Cubs and Reds jerseys to the 30 players of differing abilities, each bearing the player's name and favorite number. Last year, Fox Sports partnered with equipment nonprofit Good Sports to donate over $13,000 worth of specialized equipment for a Miracle League game held ahead of the inaugural MLB game in Dyersville. Miracle League players continue to use the equipment during their league play and open field play times. Before Thursday's game, 7-year-old Elliot Risma laughed as he received a hug from a person dressed as the Miracle League mascot, Homer, a ball player with a ball for his head. The Asbury boy, who has Down syndrome, was playing in his first Miracle League game after attending open field play at the complex this summer. It's really nice that he has something that is his, something that he gets to do where he can just show up and play, said his mother, Katie Jo Risma. Students from Wallert, Hempstead Senior and Western Dubuque High School's sports teams served as field angels, helping players swing the bat or run the bases. Several members of the Ghost Players also helped field balls, giving high fives to the young ball players as they reached each base. Former Western Dubuque High School standout Calvin Harris, who recently helped the University of Mississippi win the College World Series, chatted with fans and signed autographs. I think it's cool, the entire concept of Miracle League, and I was more than happy to be here, said Harris. I think it's cool that Fox Sports is involved, too, to showcase the Dubuque area and some of the great things that are going on here. Hannah Althoff, 8, led off the game as the first batter for the Cubs. To have a place to play an organized sport where everyone is comfortable with whatever she does, it's just incredible, said Hannah's mother, Kay Althoff, of Lamont, Iowa. Each player on the team had the chance to smack the ball off the tee, encouraged by cheers and applause from the crowd in the bleachers. Behind the backstop, brothers Ephraim and Liam Pape sported matching Reds jerseys. Are you excited to bat? Asked their mother, Abby Pape of Dyersville. Ephraim, 6, nodded, swinging an invisible bat as he imitated the crack of a line drive. Abby said Ephraim has kidney disease, which excludes him from many contact sports, while Liam, 8, has autism. She appreciates that Miracle League lets both boys play ball in a welcoming environment. If they lose interest or get frustrated, there's no judgment about it. All the kids are different. And everybody's really nice, she said. Ed Fahan, Miracle League of Dubuque board member and retired Wallert baseball coach, on Thursday served as coach for the Reds. All right, Lucius, show them how to do it, he said, as Lucius Hines, 9, stepped up to the plate. Lucius thumped the plastic bat on the field's rubberized surface. With a strong swing, he sent the ball sailing into the outfield, then sprinted around the bases for a home run. It doesn't get any better than this, in my opinion, Fahan said. The community support we've had is just unbelievable. And when you see the smiles on these kids' faces, it's all worthwhile. We'll pause a little bit from our wonderful news of yesterday's events and all that has been impacted by them to look a little bit at our opinion page and our view, the quick takes that represent the viewpoint of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald editorial board. And we have on our quick takes for Friday three smiley faces, starting out with Blind Society, a community asset. While the Tri-State Independent Blind Society's name might be synonymous with bingo, to those who are visually impaired, it means so much more than that. The nonprofit organization funds itself by hosting bingo games and selling used books. The proceeds have built a community institution that provides a low vision center offering assessments and classes for visually impaired people. As the agency marks 50 years in Dubuque, there's no doubt Don Gage would be so proud. It was Gagne who founded the Tri-State Independent Blind Society, turning his disability into a passion to assist others. The longtime director of the Blind Society died in 2020 at the age of 90. His passion and dedication left a legacy institution that continues to serve the visually impaired community of the Tri-States and beyond. Gagne had retinitis pigmentosa, a genetic disorder that causes a loss of cells in the retina and can lead to blindness. He rapidly began losing his sight in his 40s when he worked at the Dubuque Packing Company. Realizing that sight-impaired residents lacked assistance, he first founded the Dubuque Association of the Blind. Money that organization raised went to a national organization, so Gagne spearheaded the creation of the local Independent Blind Society in 1972. 5 decades, multiple locations, and countless bingo cards later, the Dubuque organization celebrates this anniversary as it continues to offer a variety of services at its facility at 1068 Cedar Cross Road. To the many long-serving supporters, volunteers, and board members of the Tri-State Independent Blind Society, a salute on your half-century of service. Our second smiley face, the positive impact that National Night Out events have on police-community relationships was on full display on a recent summer evening in Dubuque's Comiskey Park. Dubuque police, fire, and emergency services personnel turned out in force to interact with neighborhood families. Where sometimes seeds of fear and anger are sown, here real connections are being made. It works both ways. Law enforcement officials said connecting with members of the community can help open lines of communication that can be vital when investigating incidents in the city. After the last few years of tension and unrest between police and communities across the country, it's great to see a bridge-building event like this taking place in downtown Dubuque. And our third smiley face. After 175 years, the Sinsinawa Dominicans are known as preachers and teachers of the Christian faith, who also happen to make amazing cinnamon bread. Known throughout the area for its beautiful Sinsinawa Mound campus, the sisters who have lived there over the years have brought lessons of faith through art, music, environmental stewardship, and even food. Founded in 1847 by Dominican friar Samuel Mazzucchelli, the Sinsinawa branch of the Dominican Sisters began with 4 women and a mission of preaching and teaching the Christian gospel. In 1966, membership of the Sinsinawa Dominicans peaked with 1,983 sisters actively serving in the congregation. Today, a little fewer than 300 Dominican Sisters of Sinsinawa remain, and the congregation now is looking to sell about 425,000 square feet of building space, including the Rotunda Building, St. Clara Convent, and Siena Complex to ensure the future of the congregation. But the mission of the Cincinnati Dominican Sisters remains strong. Cincinnati Mound still hosts a number of local arts and cultural events, runs a collaborative farming program, sells baked goods, and continues to preach the gospel. Sisters also continue to serve in 15 states and in Bolivia and Trinidad and Tobago. For 175 years, the Cincinnati Dominicans have taken care of the land and the people in their communities. Blessings to these women as they celebrate this milestone. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DUPACO and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. It's Ken reading from his regular seat on Fridays from the Friday, August 12th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we now turn to today's obituaries. Daniel Burroughs, Galena. Daniel Dan Burroughs, 68, of Galena, passed away peacefully August 6th at St. Dominic's Villa, surrounded by family after a courageous battle with cancer. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Tuesday, August 16th, at the Furlong Funeral Chapel. Friends may call from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday, August 15th, at Furlong Funeral Chapel in Galena. Burial will be in St. Michael's Cemetery, Galena. Dan was born June 18th, 1954, to Clyde and Dolores Burroughs in Dubuque. He became a Dallas Cowboys fan at age 6 and was a part of the Junior Dukes, Colt 45, and Colts for 12 years. He married Kathleen Kelly of Galena, August 24th, 1974. Dan led a busy life, managing his business, Burroughs Accounting and Tax Service, for over 50 years. He also loved his work in sales at Clower Manufacturing, where he worked for 46 years. He served on the Galena Ambulance Team for 5 years and served 15 years with the Galena Volunteer Fire Department. In his free time, Dan enjoyed sharing his love of music, golfing, and spending time with his family and friends. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.furlongfuneralchapel.com. Patricia L. Hogan. Patricia Hogan, 74, of Dubuque, died Tuesday, August 9th at a Noble Skilled Nursing and Rehabilitation Center in Dubuque. Patricia was born July 24, 1948, in Dubuque, the daughter of Lloyd and Bernadette M. Pernhage. Patricia enjoyed playing bingo, cards, and video chatting with her grandchildren. They loved telling Grandma funny stories and making her laugh. She was a social butterfly who relished the company of friends and family. Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory is in care of the arrangements. Condolences can be sent to the family by visiting Patricia's obituary at www.hskfhcares.com. Randy K. Everett, Edgewood. Randy K. Everett, Edgewood, Iowa. Randy K. Everett, 62, of Edgewood, died Thursday, August 11th. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Sunday, August 14th, at Leonard Muniel Funeral Home in Edgewood. Services will take place at 10:30 a.m. Monday, August 15th, at Trinity United Methodist Church in Edgewood. Interment will be in Edgewood Cemetery. William J. Weber, New York City, New York. William John B.J. Weber succumbed to cancer August 2nd. He was born October 24th, 1946, in Dubuque. He graduated from senior high school in 1964. He went on to Iowa State, then to seminary, and became a minister. He then went to New York City and spent the last 44 years reaching out to those in need. On Tuesday, the 16th, there will be a get-together in the back room of Dolph's Bar from 7 to 9:30 p.m. for anyone who would like to honor his memory. There is no memorial fund. Just bring your memories. Genevieve Hartman. Genevieve Hartman, 100, of Dubuque, died Wednesday, August 10th. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Sunday, August 14th at Eaglehoff Siegert and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road. Services will take place at 10 a.m. Monday, August 15th at Sacred Heart Catholic Church. Stephen J. Post, Bellevue. Stephen J. Post, 72, of Bellevue, died Wednesday, August 10th. Arrangements are pending. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, is assisting the family. And we have a few new arrivals, and here are the latest little ones to join Planet Earth. Tuesday, August 9th, Weber, Mike and Julie Weber of Dubuque, a boy at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital, Dubuque. Wednesday, August 10th, Gravel, Brad and Amber Gravel of Cascade, a girl at Mercy One, Dubuque Medical Center. Perleth, John and Abby Perleth of Dubuque, a boy at Finley. Welcome aboard, little ones. May life give you more roses than thorns. While we're on this page, we also have the weekend buzz. Although after the big game on Thursday, what are we going to do? Well, let's find out. Here are the noteworthy things to do this weekend in the tri-states. Potosi Area Firemen's Annual Catfish Festival. Today through Sunday, Tennyson Athletic Field and Potosi Fire and Rescue Building, 210 North Main Street in Potosi. 7 p.m. today, 6 to 8 p.m. Saturday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday. Truck and tractor pulls, live music, games, and fish fry at the annual Fire Department fundraiser. The fish fry, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. or until sold out. Admission free. Meal, $13 per person. Information at 608-778-2393. Historic demonstrations in Stonefield Village. Tintype photography, music, and hat making. Saturday, Stonefield Historic Site, 12195 County Highway VV in Cassville. 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., Dave Rombo, site director of H.H. Bennett Studio and Museum, demonstrates the art of tintype photography. Don and Ann Pollock, known as Snow on the Mountain, perform with the fiddle, banjo, guitar, and mandolin. And Simone Mauser shares the history and techniques of hat making. Admission $13.50 for adults, $11.50 for 65 and older, $8 for children 5 to 12, and free for kids younger than 5. More information, 608-264-4848. East Dubuque Wing Fest, Saturday, downtown East Dubuque, noon to 9 p.m. Beer, wings, and fun for the whole family with live music all day. Wing tasting begins at 2 p.m. Fireworks begin at dusk. Admission free. Tasting tickets, $10 each. Music in the Gardens, Tapestry. Sunday, Packard Pavilion Amphitheater, Dubuque Arboretum and Botanical Gardens, 3800 Arboretum Drive, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. The free outdoor concert series presents hits of the 70s and 80s. Free will donations may be given at intermission. For more information, 563-556-2100. Sam Hunt at Backwaters Stage, Sunday, Backwaters Stage, 1855 Greyhound Park Road, 7 p.m., multi-platinum-selling award-winning hitmaker Sam Hunt will perform songs from his second album, Southside, and more. Concert will be held rain or shine. Tickets are available at backwatersstage.com or ticketmaster.com. Cost is $69 to $100. More information, 563-582-3647. And we're in the same neighborhood as a bit of area news in brief, so let's pick that up. We have Joe Davies, County native, to perform national anthem at Soldier Field. From Galena, a Joe Davies County native will be at Soldier Field in Chicago to sing the national anthem when the Bears take on the Kansas City Chiefs Saturday, August 13th. Sophia Ahmed, 28, a 2012 graduate of River Ridge High School in Hanover, whose family lives in Galena, applied for one of the national anthem slots earlier this year. "I reached out to them and asked what their process was," she said. "They accept submissions from April to June, so I sent a video and also sent a recording I had done at a friend's studio." The football club contacted her July 12th and told her she would be the featured anthem singer for Saturday's preseason game. Ahmed is a second lieutenant in the U.S. Air Force and a medical student at Lincoln Memorial University in Knoxville, Tennessee. She will graduate May 2023. Ahmed is a participant in the Health Professions Scholarship Program, a service scholarship for students in medical and dental school programs that covers tuition. Upon completion of their studies, participants repay the scholarship by working 1 year in their chosen service branch for each year they received the scholarship. Ahmed, who sang the national anthem regularly for basketball games at Butler University in Indianapolis when she was a student there, looks forward to returning to Illinois for a visit and to performing for the team she has rooted for all her life. "I'm a little nervous," she said, "but I'm more excited than anything." Police. One person injured in multi-vehicle crash. Police said one person was injured Tuesday after that individual's vehicle was struck when a driver failed to yield to a red light. Hannah C. Brown, 20, of Dubuque, was transported by Dubuque Fire Department officials to Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center for treatment, according to a crash report. The accident occurred shortly after 9 p.m. at the intersection of Dodge and Crescent Ridge in Dubuque. The report states that Emily E. Williams, 25, of Dubuque, was westbound on Dodge and was stopped at the red light in the left turn lane. Williams told law enforcement that the lights changed from red to green in the westbound lanes and she thought she was able to turn. She turned left onto Crescent Ridge, driving through a red light, and struck the vehicle of David J. Weigel, 76, of Shelbsburg. Weigel's vehicle spun out and struck Brown's vehicle. Williams was cited with failure to obey a steady red signal. Police. Teen injured in hit-and-run crash. Police said a Dubuque teen was transported to a hospital after a hit-and-run crash Wednesday. Ethan R. Ward, 15, of Dubuque, was transported by private vehicle to Unity Point Health Findlay Hospital for treatment, according to a crash report. The accident occurred at about 3:05 p.m. near the intersection of Peru Road and Louise Lane in Dubuque. The report states that Ward was driving a moped east on Peru Road when a dark-colored SUV traveling west on Peru Road crossed the center line, causing Ward to lay his moped down. Ward sustained abrasions to his arms, back, and face, and his moped sustained approximately $500 in damage. The driver of the vehicle that struck Ward has not been identified. And we have a couple of more pieces of news in brief from the Tri-State page. Dubuque headquartered lumber company buying Georgia business. A Dubuque headquartered lumber and building materials distributor has announced that it is purchasing another Georgia-based business. Spahn and Rose Lumber Company has entered an agreement to buy Still Lumber Company, a building materials supplier in Conyers, Georgia, according to a press release. Still Lumber is a natural fit with Spahn and Rose, Spahn and Rose CEO Dave Davis said in the release. Like Spahn and Rose, Still Lumber has a long history of providing quality expert service to contractor and homeowner customers. We're proud to have Still join the Spahn and Rose family. Still Lumber was founded in 1946 and services the Atlanta area. Its customers include contractors, builders, remodelers, homeowners, and Georgia film and TV studios, the release states. The acquisition marks Spahn and Rose's second recent major addition of a Georgia-based business. In August 2021, Spahn and Rose purchased the Marietta-based Metro Building Products. Spahn and Rose also acquired Dunn Lumber in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin in 2019 and Moeller and Walter Lumber in Rhinebeck, Iowa in 2020. Police, one injured in crash between car and motorized bicycle. Police said one person was injured Wednesday in a crash between a car and a motorized bicycle. Marion A. Sneed, 40, of Dubuque, was transported by ambulance to Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center for treatment, according to a crash report. The accident occurred at about 9:07 p.m. at the intersection of Romberg Avenue and Windsor Avenue in Dubuque. The report states that Sneed was riding a motorized bike westbound on Romberg. The bike was not registered and improperly equipped for street driving due to there not being any headlights. Sneed entered the intersection and was struck by a vehicle driven by Logan F. Lister, 31, of Dubuque, who was turning north onto Windsor from Romberg. Lister was unable to see Sneed due to the lack of headlights on the bike. Sneed was ejected to the south side of the intersection. Sneed was cited with failure to provide proof of financial liability, operating a non-registered vehicle, and having an insufficient number of headlights. And now some news from Dubuque and the Tri-States. Ernst talks supply chain, farm bill, economic legislation in Dubuque. U.S. Senator Joni Ernst, Republican, Iowa, weighed in on economic issues, from supply chain problems to the Inflation Reduction Act, during a Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce event Thursday morning. Ernst was the headliner of the Chamber's second Politics and Eggs event, part of a new series that kicked off with U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican, Iowa, on Tuesday. The next installment will be at 9 a.m. Friday, August 26th, featuring Iowa Senator Liz Mathis, Democrat, Hiawatha, who is running against incumbent U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson, Republican, Iowa, to represent Iowa's 2nd Congressional District, which includes Clayton, Delaware, and Dubuque counties. Not up for re-election this year, Ernst made more blatant attacks on U.S. Senate Democrats' majority decisions than Grassley did at his appearance earlier this week, especially regarding the Inflation Reduction Act, which Democrats pushed through the Senate using the filibuster-proof reconciliation process. She called the bill's more than $400 billion in spending for programs to fight climate change, close tax loopholes, and eliminate tax cuts for wealthy Americans and corporations while also lowering prescription drug costs, unnecessary dollars. It's really not necessary, she said. No matter how you twist and turn the definition, we are in a recession right now, so we shouldn't be spending billions of dollars on nice-to-have wish list items. Ernst did acknowledge that the ongoing global supply chain disruption was contributing toward inflation and offered her preferred solutions, which include tariff reform and deregulating the trucking industry. We still have a lot of tariffs on products that are coming into the United States. Some of that can be renegotiated, even just for a while, to eliminate some of those pressures, she said. And as we were coming out of the pandemic, the federal government put more requirements on those trying to get commercial driver's licenses. Why don't we wait until we have people in the pipeline and ease them in rather than having a heavy hand and slapping them down while we're trying to recover? In response to a question from Jared McGovern, member of the Catfish Creek Watershed Management Authority Board of Directors, about conservation measures in the Farm Bill, Ernst criticized the Biden administration decision to allow farmers out of Conservation Reserve Program agreements, in which the federal government pays farmers to convert cropland into natural habitat to address the global food shortage caused by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. In an emailed statement, Ryan Thomas, spokesperson for the Democratic National Committee, blasted Ernst's opposition to the Inflation Reduction Act. Senator Ernst's record is a shameful reminder that Iowa Republicans are more focused on fighting for special interests than working families. Ernst helped block capping the price of insulin at $35 a month and voted against lowering energy, health care, and prescription drug costs through the Inflation Reduction Act. Iowans deserve better, Thomas said. And a second piece from the Tri-States. Testimony hones in on abandoned shoes, pawned jewelry in murder trial. A staffer at a recycling company testified Thursday that a man accused of killing a Dubuque woman left a pair of shoes at the business the day before she was found dead. Mark T. Fischler, 61, of Dubuque, is charged in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County with first-degree murder in the death of Bernice M. Williamson, 80. Williamson was found dead July 15, 2021, lying just inside the back door of her residence with a roll of carpet over her head and some of her jewelry missing. Fischler, then the boyfriend of Williamson's niece, Kathleen M. McCarthy, was the last known person to see Williamson alive at her residence July 14, 2021. Wes Merfeld of Key City Recycling testified Thursday about a stop Fischler made at the center on the afternoon of July 14th. Merfeld said Fischler brought in $11.70 in scrap metal on that day, but he also left behind a pair of lime green shoes in a truck box out front. Video surveillance from another local business showed that those were the shoes Fischler was wearing earlier that day. While I was in the office, he was outside and he came walking past carrying a pair of shoes, Merfeld said, noting that he found Fischler's behavior odd but not suspicious. Dubuque Police Department investigator Justin Stair testified to recovering those shoes as well as retrieving video footage placing Fischler at Key City Recycling the afternoon of July 14th. Stair testified that investigators saw red specks on the shoes that possibly could have been blood. The shoes were taken for testing, though Stair could not directly testify to the results. Pawn shop workers Jedreen Naderman and Evan Smith also testified Thursday about more than $2,500 worth of jewelry and coins that were brought into Allied Pawn in Dubuque in the days following Williamson's death. In the first sale, Fischler brought in $1,325 in gold jewelry and miscellaneous coins on July 15th. He was paid in cash and given a receipt, which was displayed in court. Deanna Coleman sold more jewelry and coins on Fischler's behalf July 16th. She testified to receiving about $1,200 in cash, which she said she handed straight to Fischler. She said Fischler gave her $200 for her time. Coleman testified that Fischler said he didn't want to go in himself because he knew McCarthy's niece and Williamson's great-niece, Naderman, worked at the store. Coleman said she knew Fischler had a coin collection, and that it wasn't uncommon for the two of them to do one another favors. Police were able to obtain the jewelry and coins Fischler brought in because of the online system Allied Pawn uses to track transactions. Because the second sale was under Coleman's name, authorities were not able to track down those items before they were scrapped or sold. When shown the retrieved jewelry, none of Williamson's acquaintances could identify the items as hers. Near the end of the day, Paul Avenarius, who worked at the Dubuque Police Department at the time of Williamson's death, described a July 21, 2021 incident at Fischler's residence in which the prosecution alleged Fischler faked his own abduction. Avenarius testified that he went to Fischler's house after speaking with Fischler's landlord. Avenarius and another officer found Fischler face down in the woods near his home. Avenarius said Fischler's face was covered with a trash bag and that there were imitation handcuffs around his wrists. Police later found an identical type of handcuffs in a filing cabinet in Fischler's garage. More information about that incident is expected to become available today when court reconvenes at 9 a.m. with Avenarius' cross-examination. We have one more piece about the big game from yesterday. Vets, families get surprise tickets to Field of Dreams game. Janine and Ron Wilcox took their son Jason to his first Chicago Cubs game in 1985 at Wrigley Field when he was less than a year old. It was the beginning of a lifelong love affair with the sport and the team. He started playing ball when he was three and pitched and played center field in high school in Solon. He took up softball when he was stationed at Fort Carson, Colorado, with the 4th Infantry Division and drove up to Denver to watch the Cubs play the Rockies. When he could, he went to spring training games in Arizona. Cubs was always his baseball team, Janine said. On Thursday night, Jason's nephews, Sawyer Hagenow and Cooper Peck, got to attend their first Major League Baseball game with their grandparents when the Cubs played the Cincinnati Reds at the Field of Dreams in Dyersville. Jason was not with his family Thursday night. The Army Staff Sergeant died by suicide in October 2016 at age 32 after struggling for years with post-traumatic stress disorder. But a month before he died, he took his nephews to see the baseball field at University of Iowa. Ron still has the video. You have been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. This is Ken, and we've been reading from the Friday, August 12th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. Thank you for your listening, and tune in again next week.